This is Nursing in America. Each week, we speak with incredible Filipino nurses who have taken the leap to start a new life in the United States. If you're thinking about doing the same, then this is the place you'll find all the insider knowledge and inspirational success stories to realize your own American dream.
Hi, everybody, and welcome. Welcome, everybody. This is the fifth Lafora talk show, and we are so excited this morning. We have Miss Jean joining us. Jean, we're lucky. We are so happy that you were able to sort out your internet this morning. Jean had an internet problem, right?
It says I don't have an internet connection.
Oh, my goodness. Well, you are here now, so we are happy to have you here. And then we are also joined by two new exciting guests. Well, not new to Lafora, but new to the Lafora talk show. And two guests, we have Yanni who's joining us. Hi, Yanni.
Hey, Tanya. Good to see you.
And good to see you. And we also have Giselle who's joining us. Hi, Giselle. Maybe turn on your audio. Well, while Giselle is working on that, we want to welcome everybody. We are really excited. Today is our fifth Lafora talk show. And we have two new guests on today who are going to be sharing their experience with you. So let's get started. Giselle, can you hear us now? Oh, I think Giselle's having a problem. Maybe log in and log out again, Giselle, and make sure that your volume is turned up. Okay, so before we get started, just to share with everybody, my name is Tanya Friedman, and I'm the Chief Operating Officer of Kinetics USA. The reason why we are doing the Lafora talk show once a month is we were wanting a safe place for everybody to share their experiences. We've seen how Lafora has grown, which is the most wonderful, welcoming, incredible community. And I think it's really important for those nurses who are in the U.S. already to share with nurses who have not yet arrived in the U.S. their experience. Coming to the U.S. at the best of times is an exciting but also can be a very difficult experience. And I think that it's really important for those nurses who have been in the the U.S. for a while to share their experience, to share their advice so that they can help prepare those of you who have not yet arrived in the U.S. Because very often nurses, you know, kind of think of getting to the U.S. as the American dream, of course, and just never really thinking further than when they arrive in the U.S. But there's a whole journey ahead of you. So learning from those around you is really, really important. I seem to have lost everybody. I'm not sure what happened. I think Giselle has a weak connection. Maybe that's what seems to be happening. But we'll start with Yanni and Jean while we're waiting for Giselle to join us. Yanni, do you want to maybe share with us your experience before you came to the U.S., just your history as a nurse? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I have worked as a registered nurse for, I would say, 5 years. I applied as an immigrant in year 2009 through a staffing agency. It was a lot of ups and downs because, if you guys recall, it was during that time where we had a lot of retrogressions. So during that time, I felt that it wasn't just meant for me. So I would say I gave up like 3 times and then, you know, went back to pursuing the American dream once more. There were also things that my agency did wrong, but I'll discuss that later. Anyway, I had to go through being abandoned by an employer and then to being interviewed by other employers who wanted somebody with more than 7 years of experience until finally this employer found me and he was just looking for somebody with at least 3 years of experience. Everything moved forward in 2014. But during that time, I didn't have enough funds yet. So I had to work. I managed to balance having two jobs. I was a nurse in the morning, and I did BPO work at night. I worked as a tech support representative and eventually got promoted to email specialist, operations management, desk analyst, simultaneously while working as a nurse during the day. I was in my 20s and I was feeling invincible. It was finally in 2016 that everything moved forward really fast. And also I had my funds already. So I arrived in the US November 4, 2016. I had to endure going through the reciprocity process, I would say twice, because I did the Northern Marianas Islands route before proceeding to getting a North Dakota license. At the moment, I am licensed in Northern Marianas Islands, North Dakota, and California.
Okay. So, Yanni, if you think back to the time when you were in the Philippines, did you lose hope at certain times? Did you ever think that you would really get here?
Yes, three times I lost hope. Three times I would cry, and then I would pick myself up in the morning and talk myself into going through the process. Because having to go through the retrogression, you know, it meant requirements expiring and having to renew them. IELTS is not cheap. CGFNS, the visa screen certificate wasn't cheap. Having to go through getting all the requirements all over again just because they've expired, it costs a lot of money. So a lot of times I would have to think ahead, strategize, especially since I was working two jobs, and then making sure I get to reviews, show up for exams on time and all that. So yes, there were times I lost hope. There were times I thought it was never going to happen until it moved forward in 2014, until I went through a series of job interviews, and until finally, you know, I was told that my visa was current, blah, blah, blah. This is my interview date, my PDOS date, and so on and so forth. And then it dawned on me, oh my God, time is flying so fast. This is really it. I am leaving. And that was it in 2016.
A great moment, right? A moment to celebrate.
Yes, yes. It was a happy moment. At the same time, a moment filled with anxiety in a way, because, you know, it's a big move.
Yeah.
You're not just moving to any country, you know, you're not just moving to any place in the Philippines. You're moving to a different country, different culture, different laws, and you have to study a lot of things. You have to do a lot of research because, you know, you don't want to exactly make the wrong moves while you're in a different country. You don't want to go around breaking any laws,
yeah,
real or, you know, perceived.
Of course. And I think the seriousness of the move probably dawned on you at that moment. Jean, do you remember that moment when you realized that finally you were going to be able to make that move?
Yeah. Yes. I was so excited to come here in America. Mm-hmm. But my process is just so easy and it was so quick. So I really don't have any anxieties like what the other nurses have experienced. So I'm just so lucky enough to have that expedite process.
Yeah. So if there's anybody who's watching, like Jean, who's had an expedited process, you have to be really grateful, because I think most people can probably relate a little bit more to Yanni, where it's really been a roller coaster of things happening, things going wrong, just emotional, you know, frustrating, feeling upset, angry, excited, all in one, all mixed into one bag. Yanni, we seem to have lost Jocelle. I'm so sorry about that, Jocelle. Perhaps you can join us for the next Lafora talk show. I think Jocelle has a weak connection, so that's why he hasn't been able to join us. So Yanni, can you share with us maybe a little bit about those first few days, like as you got off the plane, what was that like for you?
You know how all immigrants always have this envelope? You know, you're supposed to be carrying that envelope because when you go through customs and all that. In my case, I landed in San Diego. And, you know, not to brag, it really was an easy process. There were only four of us. You know, they were like, what address do you want the green card sent to and all that? And at that time, I didn't have my apartment address yet because I still have to go through the processing of the reciprocity from my Northern Marianas Islands license to North Dakota. While living in California, I was staying with my family for a month because processing was a month at that time. And everything was so easy. You know what I mean? It was a lot of it was like, oh my God, I got nervous for no good reason. The moment I landed, went through customs and all that, answered a few questions, and I mean very few questions. And then they had us sit outside, I'd say for 30 minutes to an hour. And after that, I was done. And I'm not sure how this goes for smaller airports, but San Diego is one of those airports that are like, if you don't have a credit card, and I came to the U.S. without a credit card, and I can honestly attest, it's not always a necessity in that sense, as long as you've got the cash with you. But for other people, the situations are different. Their situation is different. For me, I just went to a ready card machine. A ready card machine is basically where you put in some money and it will spit out a card. So that cash was converted to a debit card and you can use it to swipe wherever. So that was that. And then obviously I did not have, I had my cell phone from the Philippines, which wasn't an iPhone. It wasn't an iPhone of any sort. It was a Star Mobile phone. So once everything was done, I called my cousin using one of the airport phones, and you can use that phone to dial any number. And, you know, the cell phones would automatically recognize it as an airport phone. And that's how I was able to inform my family that I already arrived and all that. I had to ask that question because when I asked one of the receptionists, like, where can I find an airport phone? And that was the moment it dawned on me, I'm no longer the Philippines because I'm asking for an airport phone. I repeated that question three times and they gave me a very weird look. And I said, you know, and I just explained, I'm so sorry if it seems like I'm a little crazy, but that's the way I'm feeling because it's my first time here. But yeah, so yeah, that's when it truly dawned on me, oh my God, I'm not in the Philippines anymore. And I won't be going back anytime soon.
A surreal moment, right? And
yes,
I think
it is.
It's interesting that you spoke about how you went to go ask somebody at the airport, because I think one of the things I certainly experienced this when I came to the US 20 years ago is it's really scary, you know, to have to go and ask people where you don't know what's going on and you don't kind of understand your environment. Jean, you spoke last night about assertiveness. Being assertive and confident is really a big part of coming to the US. Can you give us an example today of where you think somebody should be assertive?
Oh, my example for that assertiveness is that, like, when you when you are working in the floor, you have like supposedly you're only gonna get like 4 or 5 patients, but then you are understaffed So they have your supervisor or your head nurse has given you 7 or 8 patients. So it's like you don't feel safe. So don't just stay quiet in your corner there. Talk to your supervisor or head nurse that this is unsafe. I don't feel safe because I have like one patient that I'm doing Q2 hours vital signs. I have another patient who is on heparin drip. I have it's so difficult to manage 7 or 8 or 9 patients in that short span of time, like 12 hours. So you have to talk to your supervisor that you don't feel safe. And here in Texas, you can invoke the safe harbor. So don't be just stay quiet and say yes on everything. So talk to them and tell them that you are not safe and you need to. And the supervisor has to do something on that. Well, that's it.
I think that's a great example. And I think, as Yanni said as well, whether it's you in the airport and you have to ask a question because you don't understand how things work, or whether you're in the work environment and you need to speak to a supervisor and speak up, I think that's one of the hardest things for so many people who just arrive in the US, is because culturally, that's not really the norm. Paul and and Giselle have joined us now. Hi, Paul. Hi, Giselle.
Good morning, guys.
Giselle, can you hear us now? Giselle seems to be having a connection issue.
Yeah, I think my internet connection is not really working perfectly right now. So,
okay. Well, we're happy that you can hear. You might want to turn up your volume a little bit, Giselle. While Giselle's doing that, Paul, did I see our LaFora talk show mascot Eva join us now?
Yeah. Well, she already went inside. She was here earlier, yeah.
She's so cute. Giselle, can you hear us now?
Yes, Miss Tanya, I can hear you now.
Okay. Maybe turn your volume up as high as you can. If you want to maybe share with us, Giselle, Yanni just shared her experience, just her history of as a nurse and what it was like when she first arrived in the US. I think it's interesting also because Yanni comes from, she came directly from the Philippines, and she went to work in a nursing home in long-term care. And Giselle, your story is quite different, right? And Yanni's been here, it's 4 years, right, Yanni?
Yep, I've been here four years.
Yeah, and Giselle, I think it's just a year, correct?
I would say less than 2 years for me to get
here. Almost a year, okay. Okay. So tell us a little bit about your history, Giselle, and coming to the U.S.
All right. So I started dreaming going to this when I was, in college studying nursing. It was like 2009. I graduated 2010. I took the NCLEX 2016. I needed to go to the Middle East first, just like Miss Yanni. I didn't have the enough funds for me to process the NCLEX and the IELTS and the visa screen. So I went to the Middle East, to United Arab Emirates, so I can earn money and proceed with the NCLEX. So luckily, I was able to pass the NCLEX 2016, December 2016. And then I applied to an agency. I got my priority date 2017, and then it got current early 2019. And August of 2019, which was last year, I arrived here in the States. So it's been a year since I got here in the States.
Wow. Do you think that it helped you, Giselle, that you lived in another country outside of the Philippines before you came to the U.S.? Do you think that made a difference for you?
Well, it kind of helped me because I needed to deal with, different culture. Although, the Arab culture is kind of, it's a lot different from the American culture, but the common denominator is I needed to deal with different kinds of people. So yeah, it kind of helped me, working in the United Arab Emirates or in the Middle East. So that kind of helped me do my transition, from one country to another country.
Yeah. And I think maybe also it just gives you kind of the confidence to know that you've done it once, even though it's a different culture, you've gone through that transition once and that you can be adaptable in that way. Can you share with us your first few days in the U.S., what that was like?
All right. So, I needed to do some basic stuff like applying for the security number. I didn't know what happened. I think it should be automatic that when someone arrives in the airport, the officer should have applied you for the SSN. But I didn't know what happened to my SSN. But there was a delay. So when I called the Social Security Administration, they told me that nobody applied for my SSN. So what I needed to do to go to the Social Security office so that I can apply my Social Security number personally. And then I needed to do my fingerprint for my endorsement, for my license endorsement, since my original license is Texas license. I have done that as well. And I tried to visit some places here in Mariana, Florida. By the way, I live in Mariana, Florida, so it's a laid-back area because I wanted to see what kind of people do they have in here. And, you know, I'm just trying to be acclimated to, although it's not really soon enough, I got acclimated to the weather, to the people around here. We also visited the hospital. We were able to meet the managers of different units, and we were able to meet the CEO and the CNO of the hospital. So those were the first few days of my stay here in Mariana, Florida.
I hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. If you know a friend or colleague who would benefit from listening to this conversation, please let them know about the show. We want to help as many nurses as we can turn their dreams into a reality. If you're thinking about making the step to living and working as a nurse in the USA, we can help you. Head over to kineticsusa.com to find out more. That's kineticsusa.com.
So the first few days, it seems, are really just trying to kind of get like situated. It's like the you know, the cell phone, the social security license endorsement, maybe a tour of the place that you're going to be working. Can either of you share, or Gino and Paul, any funny stories or experiences from when you first arrived?
Well, yeah, that was one. It's very important when, you know, when you arrive, even though you're not feeling, even though you don't feel like it, you're not feeling confident, it's very important you ask questions when you don't know. Because I didn't know about the Reddit card machine until I asked. Turns out the person I asked, he worked at the airport. He was from Manila. And then when I asked about the airport phone and all that, luckily, Drink Pidos and my agency, we were always in touch. So the moment I landed, my family picked me up and all that. The next day, I processed my Social Security. And once you get the number, because you don't need the card, you just need the number, I immediately opened a bank account. Because while you might not have a credit card right away, but a debit card is of the utmost importance. Even though you don't have a credit card right away, you must have a debit card. And in my case, that was US Bank. This was in 2016. I feel that's still good advice at the moment. What's as far as the funny stories, I suppose, I would just say for the most part, there are just times I seem dazed and confused. You know, not like my residence, but it's more of like during my first few days in the US, I suffered from jet lag. My body didn't know when to sleep, when to stay awake. And then you cross over that point where you're feeling either hungover or tipsy because you're in that moment between lack of sleep or having too much sleep. There was also that funny moment in a restaurant. My family and I were eating. I forgot that we were in the US, so I did not speak in English. I spoke to the waiter in my native Cebuano tongue. So yeah, that's, like I said, it took a while for it to dawn on me that yeah, I am in the US. I mean, I may be waiting for my North Dakota license, but yes, I am in the US. By the time my North Dakota license arrived, and North Dakota is a different culture altogether, it's my first time in winter, I was shivering all the way. Everybody was looking at me funny. It was my first time in the cold. It was my first time with 40 degrees. It was my first time in, what, with 10 degrees. I landed at the airport, and then I stayed with a friend's house, and the next day, the director of nursing picked me up. And we drove through a snowstorm. After we shopped for supplies, we drove through a snowstorm, went to my apartment, and then my very first meal was actually lucky me. ramen, like the lucky meat. I think that was beef ramen. That was my first meal on my own in North Dakota. And of course, later on, you know, we went on to tour the facility and blah, blah. But yeah, that's, I don't know. I find it ironic that that's my first meal. That's when it really dawned on me. And I had no furniture, nothing. I guess it's one of the reasons I like sitting on the floor, even though I have a bed.
Okay.
But yes.
Well, the one thing that I think is really important to talk about, because we, you know, when we share our initial experiences in the US, is that coming to the US before the coronavirus was difficult in itself, as Yanni, Giselle, Jean, Paul, myself have shared with you. But coming to the US in at this time is even more difficult. Because, you know, there's so many things, Yanni, you spoke about, like the credit card or cash. I mean, right now, nobody wants to touch cash. So if you haven't got a credit card.
Yep. Nobody wants. Yeah. Or like, you know, a debit card, because there's no way you can get a credit card on your first day in the U.S. Hence the reason you get your Social Security, open a bank account right away, get a debit card right away. They'll give you a temporary debit card. And then, you know, the real debit card arrives later on in the mail. Because as long as you have that, you can use it to swipe, you can use it to order online, you know, and then you can link it to PayPal, Venmo, Cash App, especially if you live in the bigger cities where nobody wants to touch cash and they just want to use their phones for payment. So.
Yeah. Paul, it looks like you were going to say something.
Oh, yeah. Well, we're talking about funny things that we've experienced. Well, I stayed my first week in San Francisco before I moved to Texas. So my first few days in San Francisco was really fun. One of the things that I can remember that was really funny was, so me and my friend were walking around San Francisco and we were hungry. So we went to you know, in the mall, there's like lots of restaurants inside.
Like a food court?
What you call that?
A food court.
Where you eat.
Like a food court? Yeah.
Yeah, food court. Oh my God, I forgot that. Yeah, I haven't been to a food court for so long. But we went to a food court, and so we started eating. And then after I ate, I stood up and started leaving. And she's like, hey, excuse me, you're in America. You should put out your tray. She told me that. I was like, what? She's like, you're supposed to put out your tray and clean out your table. I was like, are you freaking joking or are you kidding me or what? She's like, no, that's how we really do here. So I started observing people around and they started cleaning their tables. So that was kind of odd for me because coming from the Philippines, you know, people would clean up your tables after you leave. That was kind of funny. Mm-hmm. And then another one from my clinical experience, on my first day at work, I was in the ER. So my preceptor told me, okay, let's do a straight cath to the patient. Let's do an in and out catheter so we can collect urine. I was like, sure, I can do that. So I went to the stock room and started pulling out, you know, materials. Like I pulled out a Foley catheter, I took out gloves and then lubricant. So I took it to the room and she's like, hey, what are you doing? I was like, I'm going to do a, sorry, it's a little bit windy here in Houston, but I said, I'm going to do an in and out. She's like, no, we have a kit. I was like, what kit is that? And she's like, well, let me show you. So we went to the stock room and there's a kit that has everything, including a urine cup and gloves. Like you just literally have to open it up and set it up and there you go. Well, I told her, well, I'm used to the Philippines where we don't have kits like that. We have to gather each equipment, supplies individually and take them to the patient. So that was kind of weird to me, but it's also funny because they were laughing at me and they're like, oh, Paul was pulling supplies individually. Didn't know there was a kit. I was like, well, we didn't have that in the Philippines. But yeah, that's funny for me.
Very. And I think we've just got to keep our sense of humor, right? Because, you know, you can kind of feel like a little bit, sometimes it's funny, sometimes you feel a little embarrassed because you didn't know. But how could you know? There are just so many things that are different, both clinically and culturally.
Right.
Yanni, what we seem to have lost Jocelle. I'm so sad. I think his connection is very weak. But Yanni, tell us from your side clinically, what was the biggest difference that you encountered when you came to live in the US?
There are many. And I work in a small town. I work in a very rural area with a population. It used to be 5,000 in 2016. Right now it's 6,689. Anyway, I used to work in Cebu and I used to work in a tertiary hospital where we had plumb sets, pneumatic tube birthing. So I came to North Dakota. I came to this small town expecting the same. So when we had to correct like a UA sample, a stool sample, whatever, I seriously didn't expect the fact where at some point we were the ones who brought the specimens to the hospital lab, or, you know, we were the ones to store them in the fridge or bring them to the lab, because I was used to it in the hospital where we had pneumatic tubes and we just put them in the pneumatic tube chambers and then, you know, punch in the code for the lab and then off they went. So that's one. Another is the sense of urgency. It becomes different when you're dealing with dementia residents, geriatric residents. An example would be, you know, code status. There's code 1, code 2, and then code 3. The sense of urgency lessens if that person is a code 3. Like, for example, if the person had a stroke, or if the person had a fracture. Because where I'm from, I'm used to it that, like, if that person, regardless of age, has a fracture or had a definite change in condition, we send them to the ER right away and all that. But when you call the on-call, especially here, the moment they're like, oh, she's code 3, call the family and see what they want, if they still want to send that person to the ER or just, you know, because normally code 3 is just comfort cares. So call family and see if they want anything changed, or do they want to just keep the person comfortable? And technically speaking, if the person's in their 80s and 90s, you would want to keep them comfortable. So it took me a while to adjust to that. Another is, like what Paul said, the kits. Now, if you work in big hospitals in the U.S., you have your straight cath kits, your Foley cath kits, you have your tracheal kits and all that. But here in the nursing home, we rarely get transitional care patients. You know, the ones with feeding tubes, trachs, all the attachments, we rarely get that, because for the most part, we get either geriatric residents, psych residents, dementia residents, and older residents, but are for therapy, meaning they're only there for short term. So for us in the nursing home, we don't have trach kits, you know, where you have a tracheal kit where you can clean and all that for tracheostomies, tubes and what. We don't have that. Like what Paul said, we have to pull the supplies, you know, or memorize and then pull them one at a time. Whereas in the bigger hospitals, you have those trach kits. We do have the Foley cath kits. We do have straight cath kits. Another thing that really surprised me was tracheal care. Because in the Philippines, we're used to using, you know, sterile plain NSS or sterile solution. And in the rural areas in the U.S., and I kid you not, you can Google this, you can find this in university studies, they use tap water. And especially if you Google where I live, which is Valley City, which they tout as the town with the best tasting tap water in the entire North Dakota, but actually has 12 contaminants based on the EWG website. So you'll be surprised that a lot of nurses, a lot of LPNs actually use tap water to do a rinse of the tracheostomy tube before using plain NSS. So it was a huge shock to me as well, because we always use plain NSS no matter what. And that's just, you know, some of the examples.
Wow. That's a lot of examples. That's a lot of things that are different. And just to remind everybody that Yanni's working in a skilled nursing long-term care facility. So, it might, you know, the experiences that you might have obviously would be different in a hospital. Paul or Jean, what might be different that you experience in a hospital as opposed to what Yanni's just explained in the nursing home where she's working?
For me, because I work in the Philippines in a secondary hospital when I was still there, I only worked for a couple of months, like 6 months, I think. And then I came here in the USA after that. So when I arrived here, there are a lot of like new to me, like all those pump infusion pumps, all those what else? Oh, we don't have trach patients in the secondary hospital, and also we have a little like we call a critical an ICU, but it's not really ICU. Because if the patient goes down, then we have to send them to Davao City in the tertiary hospital right away. So when I came here, everything is different. So all the equipments and all the procedures, not the basic ones, but all the equipments are kind of new to me. And it is a big challenge to me to learn that, but it is a good learning experience.
Yeah. So some similarities with Yanni, but a lot of differences, actually. And Paul, what about you?
Oh, yeah. Well, my experience in the Philippines is from a very small ER hospital in a rural setting. So when I came here to the U.S., well, my previous city where I started is actually not that big. We serve a lot of Medicare patients and uninsured patients. There's a lot of things that I had to learn skills-wise just because I don't know how to use their equipment. Say, for example, I work in a trauma center. So we have the level one infuser, a rapid one infuser, which can mass transfuse blood and fluids in 10 to 15 minutes. So that's a skill that I had to learn. Our chest tube that we were using in the Philippines, we're actually using bottles, like literally bottles. And when you move here to the States and you talk about bottles, the old nurses will be like, that's phased out 30 years ago. I was like, so we're still living in the 1980s in the Philippines. Well, literally, here it's just a disposable atrium or pleurivac that you just open up and hand over to the doctor. And there's so many things that's really, really different. So when I started putting my IV the first time on my first day. I'm that type of a person where I'm assertive, like what we all been talking about earlier. And I wanted to do the job on the first day, right? Because I wanna get acclimated fast. So I put my IV, and what's funny was after I put in my IV cannula, I started holding down the vein because that's what we do because the vein will bleed, right? Because you put in an IV. Well, guess what? The IV that I was using, and I feel like, oh my God, this is technology. This is the future. It doesn't bleed. It has a valve. Like as soon as you put it in, it doesn't bleed. So my old preceptor, she's really a great ER nurse, and she helped me acclimatize. She's been a nurse for 40 years, really, really awesome ER nurse. She's like, I know what you're doing. You're trying to stop the bleeding, right? Well, guess what? This IV won't bleed. That's okay. I know you're from the Philippines and it's so much different over there. And it was so funny for me, but also there's so many things that I had to learn, but I really learned a lot from my exposure here in the ER. And I feel like we're so behind 30, 40 some years in the rural Philippines because we're still using stuff that they're no longer using here because it's not evidence-based and it's not the best practice. But then again, there's also advantages if you have worked in the Philippines prior. Because like, for example, I was working in my facility right now. 2 weeks back, we had a major outage, right? 6 freaking hours, the computer was out. I was a triage nurse. This is at the time where there were like 30 patients waiting to be triaged. It was freaking crazy, right? So what we did was we had to stop all triaging, except, of course, if there's life-threatening situations, which, of course, we take care of that first, and had to revert to paper chart. Well, I'm working with nurses with less than 2 years experience, so I call them baby nurses, right? So all of them are freaking out. I heard one nurse said, I don't know how to use this, flipping the paper chart. I don't know what to write in here. I don't know what to do. So I was like, okay, let me take the lead. This is what we're going to do, okay? Paper chart is my thing. That's what I'm exposed to when I was in the Philippines, you know? So this is something not new to me. Yes, it can slow down the entire process in the hospital per, you know, communication by what the doctor ordered for which patient and what labs will be done to which patient and what are the results for this, it will definitely slow down the process. But it should not stop what we were doing, right? We just have to revert to the manual way of doing things. Well, I guess that's the advantage of working in a very rural third world country healthcare setting. It's because I'm a very resourceful person. Like people would call me and be like, hey, how do you do this? I'm like, well, let me show you my trick, okay? We have the tricks of the trades that I say to new nurses, like what I would do in cases where like how to troubleshoot IVs, how to make the IVs flow again without flushes. So stuff like that, like some things that you've learned when you actually practice in the Philippines that you bring over here, you know, like you are very resourceful. You're not dependent with technology. I remember one time that there was a crashing patient and the nurses are freaking out because they couldn't do a blood pressure on the freaking monitor and they changed the blood pressure cuff multiple times. This is almost going into a code. So I was like, well, get me the manual blood pressure cuff. And one of the baby nurses said, that's not accurate. I was like, that's what we were using for years. How would you say that's not accurate? That's actually where those machines were based from. So let me do it and get it. And I got the blood pressure. It was 60 palpatory. And some people don't know that skill no more because of technology. And there's advantages and disadvantages. Coming from third world to first world, you'll be overwhelmed with so many technological advances that we have here, how aggressive they are with treatments, and how assertive nurses should be. But then you being a resourceful nurse can also contribute so much to the team. So I have so much to say, but we'll do that some other time.
No, I love it. I think this is so valuable for everybody watching, because I think, as I said, that's what why the Lafora community is such a great community, because it's really nurses helping nurses. It's not just negating the experience that you had before. As Paul said, that experience is still valuable, is important. But when you come here, there's so many things that are different, not just on the clinical side, but on living in the US. And that's why I think the Lafora Talk Show is just so valuable.
I hope you enjoyed today's episode of Nursing in America. Part 2 will be available next week, so make sure you come back to join us then. If you enjoyed the episode, please help us by hitting the follow button on your podcast player and leaving us a review. If you're thinking about making the step to living and working as a nurse in the USA, we can help you. Head over to kinetics.usa.com to find out more. That's kineticsusa.com.